Good morning, everybody. I have a very special opportunity this morning to hear a lecture from Rabbi Heineman. Rabbi Heineman is somebody that's very well known for his scholarship and expertise, and it's unnecessary for me to give a lengthy introduction and to tell you about all the things that Rabbi Heineman brings to the Baltimore, Washington region and internationally. And we're very, very grateful for him taking time out of his busy schedule to share with us his expertise in halacha. And we're going to speak about bankruptcy in halacha. And that's part of our Linus HaTzedek series that we do here in Shomrei Emuna every Sunday morning. I would like to thank Rabbi Rosenbaum, of course, for his wonderful partnership and help with that, as well as all our programming and Shomrei Emuna. Sunday morning, we're focusing on monetary laws. These things are, you know, rather practical and relevant to our everyday lives. And if somebody doesn't learn them, he doesn't know them, the Chavetz Chaim tells us that he's bound to transgress them. And this is a very special opportunity that we have to learn about these halachas, to make sure that we can implement them and do the mitzvahs like we're meant to be done. And without further ado, it's a great honor for us to hear words from Rabbi Heineman, Rav of Agudas, Baltimore.
I'm going to speak this morning on a topic which borders, more than borders, is involved with halacha. But I don't want you to think that after you've heard what I have to say, that you'll be able to paskin all these shailas. I'm not paskining anything. I'm just going to tell you the general principles. But your rabbanim are the ones that will make the final decision in any case. Very often, if there's a question, it might have to come to either Din Torah, or you can go to one person who will decide, the one rav, who will decide what the Torah says in this case. The first thing that I think we should start out with is that if someone owes money, he's required to pay it. The Torah requires a person to pay a debt that he owes. Chazal say, Priyas Bal Chayv Mitzvah, paying back someone to whom you owe money is a mitzvah. Which mitzvah is it? Rashi says, where does it say in the Torah you have to pay back something that you owe? Rashi says, that we learn out from the pasuk Evan Shlemov, but Moisne Tzedek, Avne Tzedek, Vehin Tzedek Yerochem. So the pasuk says, Moisne Tzedek, you have scales that you weigh when you're selling something, you're buying something. It should be an honest scale. Avne Tzedek, your weights in a balanced scale should be honest weights. Vehin Tzedek, if you have a volume measurement, a pint, a quart, a half gallon, a gallon, it should be an honest measure. So hin tzedek, the hin is spelled hey nun, which also can be read hein tzedek. Hein means when you say yes. Chazal learned now from here, hein sholchat tzedek, v'lav sholchat tzedek. If you say yes, it should be true, and if you say no, it should be true. So if you say you borrow money, or you owe money, so if you borrow money, it's understood that you're going to pay it back. So as if you said, lend me money and I'll pay you back. So it has to be true. If you buy something, it's understood you're paying for it. you're going to a store, it's they're in business, so it's if you said you're going to pay, so even if you don't pay right away, because you don't have the money, he agreed to let you have it right now and pay at a later date. You say you're going to pay, you are required to pay. Tosfos says, we don't need a pasuk to tell you that if you owe money, you have to pay. It's understood that you have to pay. You don't need a pasuk. So, how is it understood? If you borrow money with the understanding that you're going to pay back, the person is lending you the money with the understanding that you're going to pay him back. So if you don't pay him back, you don't have any right to take the money in the first place. As a matter of fact, you've stolen the money because you took money under false pretenses. You took the money with the understanding you're going to pay back. If you don't pay back, so you've stolen it. So it's gzeila. The Torah says, well, I said so. You're not allowed to steal. Same thing as if you buy something. You buy something and you're with the understanding that you're going to pay, then the person selling it to you with understanding is going to get money. So if he doesn't get money, so then he never agreed to sell it to you. So then you have this merchandise or whatever you bought, gazela. You stole it because you've taken it under false pretenses. So that's the first thing. And because of that, a person has no right to borrow money if he has no plan how to take it back, how to pay it back. Because then you're just stealing money. You're asking someone for money, and you're not, you have no way to pay it back. So you have bitachon in the Rabbanu Shalom, they'll give you money to pay back. Very nice. You're Baal bitachon. You're on a very high madrega. But you have no right to have bitachon on someone else's expense. You can have bitachon for yourself, but you can't have bitachon that the Rabbanu Shalom is going to help for the for someone else. They say over from the Kotzka that everything that's in this world can be used for the good and the bad. There's no such thing as something which is completely bad and something which is completely good. So the someone asked the Kotzka. That's why it's called Maisa Merkava. It's twisted. It is something which good and bad is in this world is combined. So even though that most of the time may be good, too much good is no good. So most of the time it's bad. Sometimes something bad could be good. Someone has no money, and because of that, they did not kidnap his child. Someone wanted to kidnap a child. They saw a child. What use to kidnap? He has no money. He can't pay. So who knows? You know, no one knows what's good and what's bad. It could be good and bad. So someone asked the Kotzka, how can you use apikursus, not believing in the Rabbanu Shalom, how can you use that for the good? So he says, when a poor person comes to you, so you should not say to him, don't worry, the Rabbanu Shalom will help you, have you talking in the Rabbanu Shalom, there's nothing to worry about. No. Now you've got to be an apikursus and say, if I don't help him, no one's going to help him, and you've got to give him money. You can't have been talking to someone else's cheshbon. Okay, I lived in England, Great Britain, for 10 years. So over there, I remember Barclays, I was over 60 years ago. So there was a sign, Barclays Bank Limited, Woolworths. If those of you remember, there used to be such a store called Woolworth in the whole world. Woolworth Limited. What's this limited? What does that mean, limited? Limited means there's limited liability. In America, we say incorporated. In America, we say LLC. Limited Liability Corporation, that's what the Rosh HaTeivos, the Limited Liability Corporation is LLC. There's limited liability, which means that this corporation entity, whatever you want to call it, has limited liability. If you put money into a bank, you're depositing money in the bank. You want to save money. If the bank doesn't have any money to pay you when you come to take out the money, their liability is only as great as the assets of the bank. So if the bank has a building, you can start to get them to sell the building, so they should pay you. You have a right to do that. But if they rent the building and it's not their own building, or as what usually happens, the building belongs to a different corporation, for that very reason they shouldn't be able to get them to sell the building, then if it wouldn't be for the fact that it's insured by the government, you would get nothing. You can't go to the owners of the bank and say, you're millionaires, so you pay me for your pocket. No. The liability of the bank is only as far as the assets of the bank go. And when you're over the limit of what the government insures you for, FDIC, then you will be left with nothing. Just if they have assets, they'll sell the assets and divide it between all the depositors and other people that have liens on the bank. So in America, we call it incorporated. Now, the question is, according to the Torah law, can you do something like that? The question goes a little bit deeper. A corporation is an entity of its own. The corporation has assets. The corporation owns it. Who owns it? The people own it? Corporation owns it. It's an entity of its own. And this corporation does business. And this corporation, which is an entity of its own, owes money. And this corporation, if it owes money, so then doesn't matter who owns the corporation, but if this corporation does business, they have no money, they don't have to pay more than the assets of the company. Is there such a thing in Jewish law? Can you make a fictitious, it's not fictitious, but it's no, who owns this? Who is it? When a person passed away, according to the laws of the United States, or the states, his money is part of his estate. So who owns the estate? I guess the heirs, so those people named as will eventually will own it. But in the meantime, the state takes over, and they're the ones who decide what should be with his money. And if he didn't leave a will, so there's laws, who will get it, he has children, he doesn't have children, and sometimes the state gets it if the people named in the will are not available and they can't find them, so it goes to the state. So there's no such thing in Jewish law. Either only people can own property. Human beings can own property. If someone dies and leaves his $1 million estate to his dog, according to the Jewish law, the dog won't get it. It doesn't belong to the dog. Because you cannot, the only people who can own money are human beings. There's such a thing as something being ownerless, that no one owns it, that there's such a thing. But only human beings can own something. An estate can't own anything. When a person dies, the second he dies, the money goes to his heirs. So that the Torah says who the heirs are. If he has children, goes to his children. If he has a bachur, he has a firstborn son, firstborn to his father, then he will get twice as much as the other son. If he has daughters, I'm sorry to say this, they'll get nothing. only the sons get. If you only have daughters, then the daughters will inherit him equally. So a person wants to give his daughters equally to his son, what does he do? So if he writes in his will that I want that all my children should get equal shares after I die, this is my last will and testament, that after I die everything should belong equally to all my five children, boys and girls, b'chor, whatever, equally, it is not valid in Jewish law. Because when a person dies, he doesn't own his property anymore. Dead people cannot own property. Only live people can own property. So he says that when I die, that this and this should happen. He's not an owner of his property anymore. It automatically goes to the heirs that the Torah says. There is a way how a person can bequeath money to people that are not his heirs, to people that are not heirs according to the Torah. There's a way to do it. How do you do it? You give it to them during your lifetime. A person during his lifetime could do with his money what he wants. He can give it to his next door neighbor. He can't give it to his dog because his dog is not a human being. You can give it to your next door neighbor. You can give everything to one child, not to the other child. You can throw it in the garbage, your money. You can do whatever you want with your money. But you can't do anything with your money if you don't own it. So what you do is like this. You say that I want that a minute before I die, I want that this child should get this and the other child should get the other thing. I want all my children equal. Whatever you say, a minute before you die, you're still alive. If you're still alive, you have the right to do with your property whatever you want. Okay. Now we do that. And there really is a mitzvah of distributing your estate, if we can call it an estate, to give the b'chor twice as much as a regular child who's not a b'chor, to give the sons over the daughters. So there's a way around that also. What you do is like this. You say, all of my estate should belong to all my children equally a minute or an hour before I die. Except for $1,000. That $1,000 I'm not saying anything about. That $1,000 that you didn't say anything about will go according to the din of the Torah. That the Bechor will get, if there's five children, three boys and two girls, and there is a Bechor who, and one of the boys is a Bechor, so you divide this $1,000, you divide into four parts, because the girls won't get anything with this $1,000. You will, so he has, you divide into four parts, two parts belong to the Bechor, and the other two parts, and three boys will belong to the sons. That way you fulfill the mitzvah of the Torah. You don't have any more money when you die. The Torah doesn't tell you how much money you have to have when you die. So you can give away anything during your lifetime. You can give it to the Shamra Muna. You can give it to any place that you want. You have a right to give it during your lifetime. And then, that's the way to do it. But the main point that I'm trying to bring about over here is that there's no such thing as money hanging in the air and not belonging to anyone. It automatically belongs to someone or it's ownerless. But you can't have an estate that it's quasi yours after a person dies. It's not possible to do that. So now, it's not so simple like I just made it, that it sounds as if you can, just by saying that everything should be distributed equally a minute before I die, that it would help. Because there's a problem over here. In order that it should help, you have to have a kinyan. just by saying something doesn't happen. You have to make a act of acquisition. So there's one typical way, that is with the Kinyan Sutta, that means that it's like a barter. So if I, my next door neighbor wants to give me he got a central air conditioning system, and he has a window unit, doesn't need it anymore, wants to give it to me because I'm his friend. So by saying, it's yours, it doesn't become mine. But if I give him something, let's say a yarmulke, or a handkerchief, I think handkerchiefs don't exist anymore, but if they use tissues, but if, when you had a handkerchief, you give him something, a pen. So that's a barter. I'm giving you a pen, and he's giving me the air conditioning unit. So that works. That's a kinyan. It's an act of acquisition. Okay, well, that will be fine if he's giving me the air conditioner now. But what happens if he says that I'm getting my central unit put in next month, and then I want to give you my window unit, and we make an act of acquisition at that time? It doesn't help. Because the time that I'm supposed to get it, there's no act of acquisition anymore. Okay. So the way around that is that you say there's such a thing as a kinyan acquisition happening over time. You say, if he would say to me, I'm giving you air conditioning now, starting now, and it should eventually be finalized at the time that I get my central, he's giving me a window unit. When he gets the central, it starts now and ends then, it's valid. So that's how it would be done. I would suggest that before you make a will and you want to make sure that it's kosher according to the halacha, that you should go and speak to your rav first, so to make sure that it is 100% kosher, that there shouldn't be any dispute between the heirs, your children, after 120 years. It's the most terrible thing. I've seen families torn apart over a will, over interpretation of a will, over money. It is really horrible to see such a thing happen. So make sure that everything is down, flat and square, that it should not be any questions. Now, even though I've said this, what happens if your aunt passes away and she had no children? You're from, she wasn't from, her other nephews and nieces are all not from, you're the only from person over here. Let me rephrase it. Your aunt passed away. She had a child. Half of her money she gave to her child. The rest of the money she divided between her nephews and nieces. And she wrote a regular will. Now, the question, are you allowed to take that money? She died, and she left it over $25,000. Are you allowed to take it? Because since I just said that a will is not valid, so really all the money should go to her child that she has. So the question, are you allowed to take this? So I spoke to Rabbi Yashu about this, and to Moshe Feinstein about this question. And he said that if all the people over there are not from, they will go by the law of the land. And therefore, they really have given up hope of getting anything which is not actually itemized in the will. And so therefore, once they are miyash from it, so it's like it becomes ownerless. As far as they're concerned, they don't want to have anything to do with it because they go with the law. And they don't know anything about it in Torah, about the union of the Torah. So you have to take it. That's what they both said. Okay. Now, the one more point I just want to mention before I get into the will. I'm not supposed to speak about wills now, but it's a part of the same issue. That when a person does that and he's going to give things to his children now with the condition that it should start now and finish a minute before he dies or an hour before he dies, what happens if he needs the money? He gave the money, he needs it. The person doesn't know, so a person may live till 106 years, or even more. And he may have to be in a nursing home. And who's going to pay? So he's giving away all his money. So you make a condition in this present that you're giving them while you're still alive that you have the right to revoke it at any time. Okay. All right. Now the question is, can you make a corporation? We're saying there's no such thing in Jewish law that someone who's not a human being could own money. Same way there can't be, there's no such thing as an estate in Jewish law. There's no such thing as a corporation. Corporation is this entity which the law has decided that this is something which exists. A corporation, if it's not a human being, cannot own money. So the whole premise that we're saying that we're making a corporation that has limited liability, and there's no such thing. According to in halacha, a corporation works this way. They're partners. Partners have got together, and they have decided to make a business. And they have made an agreement between themselves and between the people that are their vendors, the people that they service, and the people that they may take money from, that you should know. They would say, when someone comes and that they borrow money, and they say to the lender, I want you to know that I am not going to be personally responsible to pay back this price. I'm not personally responsible to pay back this loan. You can take my assets, but I'm not personally responsible. You could do that. When it comes to money issues, you can make whatever conditions you want. You can say, I'm selling you this article. If it rains tomorrow, you've got to pay me twice as much. If the person agrees, so it rains tomorrow, he's going to pay him twice as much. If it doesn't rain tomorrow, he just pays the regular price. In business, you can make whatever agreements you want. So if I will tell the customer who wants to buy from me, look, it's guaranteed. This product I'm selling you is guaranteed for a year. But I'm telling you, I am not personally responsible. You can take my assets, but I'm not personally responsible. And the customer agrees, you can make such a deal. So in halacha, what a corporation is, it belongs to partners, human beings. It's not an entity on its own. It belongs to human beings, but they have made a condition, whoever does business with them, that they are not personally responsible. They can take from the assets. In the Lashon, in the words of the Gemara, it's called apaytik imafurish. Ein lach perot el mizeh. If I owe you money, you can only recoup money from this piece of land. That's the case of the Gemara. So it doesn't make any difference where you say it. When it comes to business, you can make whatever agreements you want. Okay. So you have to tell the customers, of course, that or the people you're borrowing money from or you're taking money from, whoever you're doing business with, you have to tell them, you know, this is the deal. The deal is that I don't have any personal liability. And if you say that, and the customer agreed, it's fine. Okay. Now, the when a person says, on the front of his store, Barclays Bank Limited, Woolworth Limited, you've told them that there's limited liability. It says so, right in front of the store. On your business, on your invoice, on your bills, it says incorporated, which means limited liability. You've written LLC, limited liability company. You've told them. So it's a known thing that when you do business with a corporation, or you do business with a limited liability company that there's limited liability. And since it is known, so we said that whenever you make a deal in money things, whatever the two customers agree to, it's agreed. Now, if he says, I didn't know what limited meant, we say, you're going to have to prove that, that you didn't know. How can you prove? You can't prove. Well, you a moron. You live in the United States. You don't know what incorporated means. You don't know what LLC means. So, since it is clear, spelled out in Russia Taylor's, it spells out LLC, INC. So it's spelled out there. So everyone knows that. It's limited liability. And so therefore, that's how it helps. Okay. Now that we've established that, we can go a little bit into the to understand that if someone is bankrupt, so either they go into chapter 11 or 7. I'm sure there must be some chapters in between in the bankruptcy laws. But the two main things are chapter 11 and chapter 7. Chapter 11 is that the government... Now, I'm just saying what I heard. I never really studied all the chapters of bankruptcy, but this is the way I understand it. I may be wrong. Chapter 11 means the company is a viable company. It is a company that should do business, could do business, sounds promising. But for some reason, they had a fire and they were not insured, and so now it's a setback. And if they don't have the money to pay back because they had to make a new building or whatever, so they don't have the money. But if they could get rid of these debts, which they have right now, at least temporarily, not to have to pay them, then they could recoup this business, go back into business, make money, and maybe eventually pay back all the chayes. We think that's chapter 11. So chapter 11 basically says that it's a viable business, the state will come in, and of course it's under their hashgacha, because who believes them that they don't have any money? So the state comes in, they look through all the paperwork, they do their homework, and they decide that it's true, they can't pay these debts. So whatever available assets are there, and they don't have to give up their whole business, the available assets, liquid assets or things that are not so crucial for the business, they will say they will divide that between all the creditors, the people that they owe money to. And I believe that in chapter 11, if they eventually make money that they have to pay back, they have to actually pay it back. But right now, they don't have to pay it back. And of course, who knows what's going to be with this company, and who knows if they're going to make money, and it could be they will lose everything. So they give them 10 cents on the dollar from the available assets, which are divided equally between the creditors based on how much they owe them. So they that's the law. So since there was this condition in this partnership, as according to the Torah law, that whenever you do business with me, that it's only I'm only responsible as far as the assets go. So bankruptcy is something which is sustainable according to the Torah law. The Torah law will go along with this bankruptcy. When it's chapter 7, where the state decides that this is not a viable business at all, then they just divide the available assets. They will sell the building, sell everything which they have, and the available assets will be divided between all the creditors on a certain amount per dollar, whatever percentage it may be. It's valid in Torah law. Now, this has nothing to do with Dina de Malchus Dina. I didn't mention a word about Dina Malchus Dina till right now. Dina Malchus Dina means the law of the land is something which we have to abide by. And that's the law of the country, that a person declares bankruptcy, chapter 11 or chapter 7, whichever one it may be, so they, the government will look into it and they can do it. I didn't mention anything about it. Because I was saying, even without Dina Machusadina, that this would be the halach of the Torah. It's not so simple that Dina Machusadina would work in this case. It is true that we have to abide by the law of the land. But there's a reason why we have to abide by the law of the land. It's not just a Gzeres HaKosev. It doesn't say clearly in the Torah. I don't think there's any pasuk in the Torah that says you have to abide by the law of the land. There's a reason for it. The reason is, so this is one of the reasons that's mentioned in the Ran. The country, whoever runs this country, has the right to say, you want to live in my country? I let you live here on the condition that you listen to my laws. That's why, say, Dina Machusadina. So there's a question here. Some people say in Eretz Yisrael, there is no Dina Machusadina. Because who gave Ben-Gurion the right to say, you want to come live in my country? You have to listen to my laws? Is it his country? No. Eretz Yisrael belongs to all the Jews. Doesn't belong to him. Okay, so maybe it doesn't apply in Eretz Yisrael. But even where it does apply, it doesn't apply to everything. If the law of the land says that all Jews have to wear a yellow star, that's a law. It's not a law which is binding on a Jewish person to do that. Because number one, it's only laws which apply to everyone. You can't single out someone. You can't single out a person. It's not considered a valid law. I'm not saying that in places where they had that law that they shouldn't wear yellow stars. They can get into big trouble if they were caught without a yellow star. So a prudent thing would be to do it. But the Torah does not require that a person should wear the yellow star. So where does it apply? It applies to, number one, in the issues where the government has a benefit from this law. So the government has a law that you have to pay taxes. So the Torah law is that if you live in the country, you have to pay the taxes because the government benefits from the taxes. It doesn't make any difference if it's income tax. It doesn't make any difference if it's sales tax. There's a city government and a state government and a federal government. We're living in all three. We're living in all three at the same time. So we've got to listen to all the laws which benefit them. And there's another case where you say Dina Machusadina, and that is in a case where it is something that has to do with people in general, that should be able to get along with each other, which only the ruling power can make a law like that. For instance, there's a law that if you come to a traffic light and it's red, you should stop. So that is a law which is meant for the tikkun harabim, or there's a speed limit on the road. So then that's made for the tikkun harabim. So those laws we're mechuyev to keep, because they're the ones who can make the laws. So we're mechuyev to keep those laws. Now, I'm talking about speed limits. I just want to say that any law that they make which is not enforced is not a law. There used to be a law in Baltimore City that said, not Baltimore City, New York City, that said that a woman has to wear a skirt that goes to 2 inches beneath the knee. It was made in 1812. Otherwise considered indecent exposure. So a couple of years ago, they repealed that law. But this is for Goyim. This is not for Jews. So according to the Jewish law, if a woman is in a chiyuv to wear a dress that covers her knees because of tznius, but it's not that she went against the law. If she would wear a miniskirt, she didn't go against the law because it was not enforced. Okay, they took her off in 2006 or wherever it was, because they were afraid that someone might use it. You could use it, really. You could put someone in jail for that. But so they repealed the law. But so if they don't, if the police don't give you a ticket unless you go let's say 10 miles over the speed limit, that means it's not enforced until 10 miles over the speed limit. So then when it says 50 miles an hour, so till 60 is not considered that you have gone against the law. Even though technically, if you get a policeman that had a fight with his wife and got a bad mood that morning, he may give you a ticket for going 51 miles an hour. He has a right to do that. And it's considered technically against law, but since it's generally not enforced that way, so then whatever is the custom that they don't enforce is not considered a law. Okay. So now the question is, there's a law you have to wear a seatbelt, and it's enforced law. Is this, okay, it's a good thing to wear a seatbelt, I'm not questioning that. People should wear seatbelts. The question is, according to the Torah law, are you required to wear a seatbelt? Because they made this law. That's the question. So according to the simple thinking, it doesn't help, the government doesn't benefit from it. It is not something which is meant because that the public needs it because people should not like a stop sign to enhance the flow of traffic, because otherwise the traffic wouldn't be able to work. So maybe they don't have a right to make such a law. And there's also a way of thinking that maybe they do have a right to make the law, because if people don't wear seatbelts and more people get hurt in accidents, in the end the government's going to have to take up the tab for paying for all those people who don't have medical insurance and don't have automobile insurance, and there are a lot of them, and then the government's going to have to pay for them. So the government, maybe the government is considered a benefit from this law. Well, there's two ways of looking at this. But the main point that I'm saying is that these laws, the bankruptcy laws, are these something that the government benefits from? Is it something which is made for Tikkun Rabim? That's questionable. It's questionable if they would fall into these guidelines, the framework of Dina Machlokes Dina. That's why I didn't mention it. Okay. But now, everything that I did mention only applies to corporations. But I didn't say anything about personal bankruptcy. Okay. Now, personal bankruptcy, when you go and borrow money from someone, there's no sign saying I'm incorporated. You're not incorporated. So the understanding is, when you borrow money from someone, they're not that you're only going to pay for his assets, so he's going to pay you. When you sell something to an individual, sell something to an individual and he doesn't pay, there's no understanding that you can only demand payment from his assets. You have to demand payment from a person. Now, it doesn't have anything, so then you're going to have to go to his assets and to force the payment. But the obligation to pay is not on the assets. The obligation to pay is on the person. So here, this whole, everything that I said about the bankruptcy laws are valid, even without Din Malchus Dina, because that was the understanding of the initial agreement, do not apply to personal bankruptcy. So over here, we're going to have to we have to work in a different way. We have to say that maybe Din Malchusa does work, maybe it doesn't work. Is this considered a tikkun for the world that people should be able to get along with each other? It's doubtful. So therefore, the only thing that we can say is that if they agree, if the bankruptcy laws say that each person gets some amount on the dollar, say 10 cents on the dollar, maybe it's an agreement that you've agreed to take the 10 cents on the dollar, because if you don't agree, you'll end up with zero. It's better to get 10 cents on the dollar than to get 0 cents on the dollar. So this is an agreement. You realize you're in a difficult situation. The person doesn't have the money. It's very difficult to squeeze water out of a stone or money out of someone who doesn't have it. So maybe it's considered an agreement. But according to the din of the Torah, the agreement only is that right now I'm willing to take 10 cents on the dollar. But you still owe me the rest of the money. I only agreed because that's all you have. But if in the future you'll have more, you don't, so then I didn't agree to that. And actually, according to the din of the Torah, you actually, there's the personal bankruptcy is not valid. It's valid maybe at this time, that, and you don't have the right to go and grab his assets, because you, it has to be fair and everyone has to get the same amount. But eventually he does owe this money. Now I want to mention something else. If someone has money and doesn't pay, in the Jewish law, they put him in jail. Torah doesn't think about a jail, except except in a certain case. But Rashi says in Pesachim, someone has money, doesn't pay, you put him in jail. Someone has a wife who they're separated and he doesn't want to give her a get, you put him in jail until he decides that he wants to give her a get. You can't force him to give her a get. But you can, if he decides on his own that he wants to give it after he's in jail for a few years, so then that's fine. You can do that. So, so I'm saying that personal bankruptcy really doesn't hold too much water in Jewish law. Now, here again, that's all by people who are shomer mitzvahs, people who keep the Torah. And that if you lend money to someone who is a, you're a shomer Shabbos, and the person is a shomer Shabbos, so then you want to go by the law of the Torah. And then he, even if he goes bankrupt, personal bankruptcy, he still owes the money. But if you're dealing with people that are not shomer Shabbos or goyim, that do not go by the Torah law, so then they accept this as a final agreement. And once they've accepted the final agreement, so then once they accept it, it's accepted. So it comes out there's a difference with whom you're dealing with in the, in this case. But if there will be, both of them will be people that keep Shomer Mitzvahs, they should go to a Beis Din, and the Beis Din will decide. And even though that I have said this general principles that I've mentioned, they're very small things that can make a very big difference. I'll give you an example. I don't say I'm going to stop in a minute. They were, this couple were engaged. The chassan broke the engagement on the day of the wedding, on the wedding day. Could you imagine what kind of cruelty that is? On the day, everything was ready. The kawa has her dress. The caterer is ready. Everything's ready. He broke the engagement on that day. Terrible. Okay. So Chaim says, if you say over a story like that, even if it's important for you to, it's important for you to say that, because if he, let's say, wants to get engaged again, once, so then and someone asks you, what do you think about this person? So you got to tell him the story. You have to tell him the whole story. Because even though the way I told it to you, it sounds terrible, but what happens if on the day of the wedding, 10 minutes before, the kala told him that she has cancer and the doctors give her 1 year to live and there's no way she can have any children, and then he broke the wedding? So is that such a terrible thing? Then you can understand it. I don't know if he should or if he shouldn't. They say the Chazon Ish, when he got married, on the day of the chuppah, they told him that his wife couldn't have any children. He said, I'm going to go through with the wedding anyway, because he doesn't have it within him to cause this kind of pain to his kawa. And he never had any children. But, so, it's a bit of chassidus. But if he, and that was an act of piety. But you can't blame him. She should have told him before. She could have waited until the day of the wedding to tell him. So then, it's a different story. That wasn't what he understood when he got engaged. He thought she was a regular girl. She didn't know that she's only going to live for a year and that she can't have any children. So it's a completely different story. You've got to tell the whole story. So what I'm telling you is that it's like a, maybe you consider like a small thing. It's a big thing. You've got to tell the whole story. I'm just saying general principles, that if there's just something else over here, it may change the whole picture from black to white and from white to black. And finally, I want to say the following. If someone, in Jewish law, if someone owes money and he doesn't have money to pay, it's not like the bankruptcy law. He has a house that's worth $1 million and he owes $100,000. He goes bankrupt. He can save his house. Well, don't take away his house. According to the din of the Torah, there's a din of a sadrin lebalchov that you leave him a little bit of money. You leave him money for food. They should have enough money for food for 30 days. For himself, for food, but not for his wife and children. Why not his wife and children? I mean, his wife and children are human beings. And he is responsible to take care of his wife and children. Well, if he doesn't have enough, if he only has himself, not his wife and children, he should give his food to to his wife and children if it's enough. And he is required, if he doesn't have any parnosa, to go and beg to make sure that they have food. That's his responsibility. But that's what we give him, food for 30 days. We give him how much food? What is he going to eat? Steaks? No. Like a regular average person. That's he has right to have that kind of food. Clothing? He needs enough clothing to keep him dressed for 1 year. One suit for Shabbos and one suit for the weekdays. And all the rest of the suits get sold and go to the creditors. However, you don't sell the clothes of his wife and children. That's a different story. If he has tefillin, you let him keep his tefillin. But he has svarim. Even if he's a talmid chacham, and he has to say a shir on bankruptcy laws, or whatever else he says, you take away all the svarim and sell them. He has to. It's not right that he should have things that are not 100% necessary, and other people who've lent him money or he owes money to should just go away without anything. If he's a carpenter, so he can have two saws and two doubles of everything that he needs in case one breaks, and everything else that he has, it is sold. If he has a refrigerator in his house, you need a refrigerator. What do they do before they had refrigerators? Did people die? No, they live without a refrigerator. Sell the refrigerator and give it to his creditors. Suddenly, if he has property, so you sell. If you have a house that's worth $1 million, you sell the house, and he has the right to buy a house, which is an average house. I don't know what it is over here in Silver Spring. In Baltimore, it's cheaper, so maybe make him move to Baltimore. And so he has to have a place to live, you let him have. But it's nothing fancy. And everything is not an absolute necessity, you sell. So those are the Torah laws about how you deal with it. It's not the same as the bankruptcy laws, which a person can file for bankruptcy and be a millionaire. After you file for bankruptcy, there's various ways how to do it. I'm not getting into that right now. So that's all. You know, Yashar Ben Soloveitchik, the Beis Halevi, once was called into the secular court. Now, he lived about close to 200 years ago. And he was called into the secular court, and as a character witness for someone that they said they did something wrong. So after he did that, the judge calls him into the private chambers and says to him, "You know, our laws, our secular laws, are much better than your Torah laws." So Soloveitchik asked him why. He said, "Because in." Your law, the Torah says, "Lo sikaf shaychad," a judge is not allowed to take a bribe. But it does not say in the Torah that you're not allowed to give a bribe. The Torah says you're not allowed to take a bribe. Well, our laws, not only you're not allowed to take a bribe, you're not allowed to give a bribe. So it's much better. So Rav Soloveitchik said, no, it's just the opposite. Our laws are much better. Because in your laws, if someone gives a judge a bribe, the judge will take it because he's not afraid that the one who gave him the bribe is going to squeal on him, because he'll also get indicted because he gave him a bribe. So he can take it without any problem. But in our law, that if the judge will take a bribe, the person will complain later, you took a bribe because he didn't do anything wrong by giving the bribe. The only thing was the one who took it. So therefore, our laws are much more effective and will stop a judge from taking a bribe. Are there any questions? Okay, you're right that they could make such an agreement. I said the whole basis that for a corporation that it works is because there is this agreement. So you're 100% right in that. But that you say should be implicit in the transaction, because we live in the United States, which I agree with. We do live in the United States. That's 100% true. But because it's written in every contract that this agreement should be subject to the laws of the state of Maryland or whichever state you're in, shows you that it's not an implicit understanding. Otherwise, why would you have to write it? So it's only implicit because if it is written, not if it's not written. Yes? Well, my understanding is that I don't know the shul, no. I'm a worker. The shul there is such a thing as being the property of the community. They're all partners in a shul, a mikveh, a yeshiva, whatever communal organization they are. It belongs to the whole tzibur. And if they want to sell, let's say they want to sell a place that belongs to the tzibur, they sell it through the Zion Tuvei Ha'ir, and sometimes it has to be B'mamad Anshei Ha'ir. The seven people who are the board of directors of, let's say, this shul, they want to sell the shul for a warehouse. So then if the board of directors decides, they have to have the permission of the whole membership to be able to do that. So the board of directors decides that, then they have a membership meeting and they say that we're going to sell this if they agree, or most of them agree, so then it could be sold. That's the exact proof of what I'm saying, that shul is not belong to nobody. Shul belongs to the members, and the members appointed the board of directors to take care of it for them. If it's 50? Well, I don't know if I was just taking those numbers, arbitrary numbers. Basically, it is whatever they are makbid on. So it could be on Sundays they're not so makbid because they are less priests and they can't hold themselves up with these kind of things. So it all depends what they're makbid on. I don't want to put exact numbers on it. I know if you're in Howell County in New Jersey, you have to be careful not to go 1 mile over the speed limit, otherwise you get a ticket. So then I advise you both in order not to get a ticket and also not to violate the din of the Torah, that not to speed.
How
if they are there from and they abide by the laws of the Torah, then it's there's like this. According to Rabbi Yashiv, you have to go by the law of the Torah. According to Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says that a kinyan, when you make a kinyan, right, that's an act of ownership. So the basic premise of a kinyan is it's an agreement between the two sides, and you've done something to show that you agree to this. I'm transferring something I own to you, so you give me something, and when we make this kinyan, it's understood between the two of us that this item which I had is going to belong to you. The Gemara says there's such a kinyan called situmta. Situmta means it's an agreement to that this should be a kinyan. Like on the diamond market in Manhattan, when they shake hands and they say mazel bracha, that means the deal's over. That means it's clinched. The deal's clinched. So they can make a deal like that with a handshake. You can make a, you can do that. So Moshe says that by writing into a will, it could be that that in itself is considered a kinyan, because since most people are not Torah observant and they go by what they write in the will, so then it is it could be that itself is considered a kinyan. But leaving that on the side, I don't want to give a wrong impression over here. Chazal say mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames. This person who passed away, he said something, he wants something to be effective. It's a mitzvah to listen to what this person who has passed away has said. Whether it is, in this case, it's not binding. If he says, I don't want to fulfill this mitzvah, I'm not so frum, I'm Shomer Shabbos, but that frum I'm not, that I should give up $100,000. So then he can say that, but it's the wrong thing to do. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei hames means that if this was the will of the person that passed away, it's a mitzvah for the person to fulfill what he said. So if he did say that my property should go to my next door neighbor, half of my property and the rest of it should go to my children, it is a mitzvah on the children to listen, even though that technically it's not binding, because he's giving it after he died. But since this was his wish, it's a mitzvah for the children to fulfill what the deceased person has said. We do this when we have, but in order to do it, it's not that we go and tell these people, you know, this is the Torah law. One person, the one who's losing out, he's the one who usually comes to the Besdin and says, you know, this is not right, or whatever. So then the Besdin would summons the other person. If one person comes to ask us, well, Besdin doesn't mix into the, where they're not asked to mix in. But if they were asked by one party, they have a right to do that. Business send a summons to the party that doesn't that may be offending. We don't know yet. And the business listens to the case. And as I've said, a lot of small things can change everything that I've said drastically. So you can't really pass them by anything that I've said. I've just said general principles. And as was pointed out before, if you lend money, and you say that I want that this money should be paid back, they both agree, according to the laws of Maryland, then it is the same thing as a corporation, and a bankruptcy would be valid even according to the Torah law. Now, if he says, the one person says it was made according to the laws of Maryland, and the other one says it wasn't, okay, so then Besdin will have to deal with that to do whatever the halacha says in such a case.
Am I understood correctly? If a person gets both to non-Jews, non-observant Jews, and observant Jews, then he can actually go into bankruptcy against the non-Jews, non-observant Jews, and ratify his debt owe to the serving machine?
Well, the thing is like this. It's illegal to do that. You can't pay one person over the other. What I'm saying is that here, according to bankruptcy laws, they will divide whatever they have, and he will still owe the money. I mean, they're going to divide all his available property that he has. And he can't go and just voluntarily decide that I'm going to pay one and not the other. He can't do that. Because the bankruptcy law will take all his property that he has, all available, and divide it. But that will not that won't mean that he doesn't have to pay back the from Jew if the Bezin will say he still has to pay them.
But can he pre-ratify?
Cannot do that.
I'm going to pay this debt.
It's against the law. Cannot do that. Because the state, or whoever is in charge over here, will divide all his available assets between all the people he owes money to. So he has no money left anymore. But the other people, if it's a Chapter 7, he doesn't have to pay them. But the ones that are from who go by the law of the Torah, they will go to Beis Din, and maybe he will have to pay them in the future for money which he's going to get in the future. Right now he has no money. And he can't go and just pay them and then declare bankruptcy. If you do that, they will get the money out of the people. It's against the law. You can't do that.
There's some money that is not given through death will. It's done through a specific document, like a multi-time money in the retirement plan, and it's beneficiary. So how does that work out in terms of inheriting in bankruptcy? In other words, life insurance. What is that? If you give all your money to your children or friends, or what? Is that Torah law? Does that make it more complicated, the issue?
Okay. So a person has insurance, life insurance, and he writes that all the money should go to my wife, which is typical, which person should do. Should I take care of her? He's required to take care of her. As a matter of fact, that if a person dies, his responsibility is to take care of his wife at the same standard of living that she lived at while he was alive for as long as she lives if she doesn't remarry. Once she remarries, he has to pay her chuba, and then, which is about $47,000. And if he married her, she was never married before, and then he doesn't have to pay any more. But if a person has life insurance, and he says to my life insurance, I want, half to go my wife, and the rest to divide my children, boys and girls, he can do that. And the reason why he can do that is because he never owned, if it's a term insurance, he never owned it. And even if it's a life insurance, he doesn't own it. They owe it to him. And they take the money and they invest it. Just like every bank takes the money and invests it. So, but for sure, if it's a term insurance, he never owned it. So therefore, in such a case, we don't have the problem that the money automatically goes to the heirs of the Torah. If he never owned it, he has no heirs on this money. It's just an agreement, and therefore he can say, so leave it all to his dog if he wants. The dog can't be kainet, but nor will any of his heirs be kainet according to the Torah law, because it was never his. Okay, so therefore you go by the agreement, whichever it was, and whatever he says should have will have it. But money which he did have, so that's what we have the problem with. I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Why isn't bankruptcy subject to the problem of our cause? It's gone to the secular or secular.
You don't have a choice. If someone takes you to court, so then what are you going to say? I only go to Bezdin, I'm not going to go to court. You can't do that. The one who's the creditors, the people who are asking for the money, they're the ones that are going to bankruptcy court. Really, if everyone was involved from Yidden, they would go to the Beis Din. And the Beis Din would decide how much everyone should have. But since very often not everyone is from Yidden, And they're going to court. You're saying, I'm bankrupt, I can't pay. So they automatically go to court. And the only way you can really get away with it is if you go to court. It's not considered going to court. Now, if you go to Beis Din, I just want to mention that it's not so simple the way they would divide up the money. It's not necessarily said that if he has five people that he owes, that everyone will get, let's say, 10% of what he owes them. Because if they're selling his property, the real estate that he has, then the first person who we owed money to, there's a shibudim and a chassan, and he gets the first grant. The second person gets whatever be left. So if he has a house that's worth, let's say, $1 million, and he owes $3 million to five creditors, the first $3 million to five creditors, and his house is worth $1 million, so the let's make it more simple. $6 million. He has $6 million, and he has three creditors, each one $2 million, and his house is worth $1 million, so the first one will get the whole $1 million. It's not real estate, it's movable property, that is divided equally between each one, because there's no shibud on the Tauflin. But on Kaka, he was already mishubud, and if it was the middle of the Shtar, whatever, and they even find the middle of the Shtar, and it's on the Chosim, and it would be divided differently. Not in the same way necessarily as the bankruptcy court would divide it. And that's if they went to Bezdin. But if you have people that... Who is the one who's interested that they should go to the court? Who is the one who's the people are asking for the money?
The debtor has to
go through the court to get rid of these people. But if they were all from people, they would go to Bezdin. And Bezdin would deal with it. But not necessarily the way they would. And they're much more strict on what the person who owes the money can keep for himself than the law of the land. Okay, Rabbi Stein, I want to thank you all for listening to me. Have a good day.
Would you like to take a behind this?